Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Washington podcast with your host, Vincent Cavallari.
Sink these shoes, quit clocking down some dead end street. Take these shoes.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Mill Creek View podcast. I'm your host, Mill Creek City Councilman Vincent Cavallari, and this is the Mill Creek View podcast, Washington edition. As always, we are excited to have you with us. We'd like you to check us out at mcview.us. Please subscribe, comment to us, like us, write us, whatever you choose. We'd love to hear from you, but certainly do subscribe. We need subscriptions, so do your job out there. Help out. And of course, we promise to make this a good use of your time. And in keeping with that same promise, it's our mission to continue to bring you great guests. Guests with their fingers on the pulse of your community and people you want to hear from, people you certainly need to hear from, and tonight's guest is no different. Washington State Representative Carolyn Eslick will be joining us, and we are, of course, excited to have her, and we'll bring her on in just a few moments. And remember, here at the Mill Creek View podcast, our mission is simple. It's to always endeavor to make this a place where dialogue and debate will thrive and survive, and the truth will always have a home. And that's my eternal pledge to you. Friends, lawmakers in Washington State are congregating down in Olympia this week. Actually, since January 1. They're conducting 60 days of continued lawmaking. This is what's commonly known as the short session. It actually started on January 8th and will go until March 7th, unless, of course, the governor calls for a special session. In Washington State, Democrats hold a large majority in the House, so there's not a lot of honest debate taking place, simply because they have the ability to ram legislation down our collective throats, which is what they usually do. However, this year there's a new wrinkle. This session is a bit extraordinary, and I'm going to tell you why. Democrat lawmakers will have a lot more money to spend than they ever anticipated. The funds are due to Washington's controversial cap-and-trade tax, or what's commonly known as the state's new climate initiative. It's become the Democrats' latest money grab scheme, and the law says they must determine how to allocate the monies before the 60-day session is up. Since this climate bill was enacted, fuel prices have skyrocketed in Washington State. Washington now has risen to second in the nation for fuel costs, surpassing even Hawaii. And friends, high fuel costs drive everything in our economy upward, from food, goods and services, entertainment, travel, you name it. Anything that requires a car, a bus, a ship, a plane, a train, even a bike to go from A to B has gone up exponentially and will continue to do so. Sadly, this isn't the first tax created without the consent of the people, and it likely won't be the last. It's become the latest Democrat calling card, and frankly, it's a forecast of things to come. Fortunately for Washington residents, a remedy does exist. However, that requires participation from you, the people. As you'll hear today, some have already done the heavy lifting on your behalf. Many years ago, Washington became one of the first states in the Union to adopt what's called the initiative process, thus securing the rights of citizens to remake laws they disagree with. Today, if Washingtonians are dissatisfied with certain laws, they can petition to place proposed legislation on the ballot. This process is termed initiative because it is the citizens that initiate the legislation. Fundamentally, it's simply the law of the people by the people. And friends, it's no easy trick getting the proper number of signatures on the ballot. It's very labor-intensive. It's very expensive. The initiative and the referendum process jointly guarantee Washington residents the right to determine its own future, and these initiatives, they have clearly shown to be effective in protecting the people's interests. In fact, many significant laws were enacted through this process, including capping property taxes, public disclosure, and overturning affirmative action are among a couple of highlights. But one question does remain. Will the current electorate participate in the initiative process in November? This is always a cause for concern, and all of you should be aware of the incredible effort that goes into making the initiatives a reality. These processes do exist to provide relief, but requires you to execute. For a little over 3 years, unfortunately, many of you put your heads in the sand hoping that this would blow over. But as you can see, that's clearly not going to happen. At some point, you're going to have to ask yourself a question. What am I doing to protect my future or my family's future? Have you even done the bare minimum, such as vote regularly? It's my hope that this will be your wake-up call this year, and activism will become a huge part of your life going forward, because America has hit that fork in the road, folks, and it's decision-making time. We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, Representative Carolyn Eslick will be joining us, so please stay tuned. We will be right back. How much money's in the bank? It's all about the time we spend and those we have to thank. Thank all those good guys and gals for being such good friends. Baby, that's what it's all about till the bitter end. If you like what you're hearing here, you're going to love the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast, found at all your favorite podcast outlets.
It's only money, not worth the paper it's printed on. It has no warmth when you hold it in your hands.
Friends, welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for sticking around. And just so we can quickly pay the bills here, too, the way we grow this show is through you. If you like what you hear, please tell 10 friends. Like us, share us everywhere. Write us, comment, whatever you choose. Just make sure you keep subscribing to mcview.us. And as always, we promise to make this a valuable use of your time. Friends, tonight's guest currently serves as a Republican House member in the Washington State House of Representatives. She's held that seat in the 39th District since 2017. The former owner of a restaurant in Sultan, she's also the founder of Grow Washington, a nonprofit organization. Her political career started when she was appointed to the Sultan City Council in 1996 and subsequently elected to the City Council in 1998. She served honorably for the next 10 years until being elected mayor of Sultan in 2008 and served in that capacity through 2017. It's worth noting she was also the first ever female mayor in the city of Sultan. That same year, the King, Skagit, and Snohomish County Councils voted to confirm her to an open legislative seat in the Washington State House. She was immediately sworn in September of 2017. She presides currently in Sultan, Washington, where she lives with her husband, Chuck, and they have been blessed to parent six wonderful children. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome 39th District Representative Carolyn Eslick. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you, Vincent. That was a great introduction.
Well, thank you. It's
appreciate that.
My pleasure, and it's well deserved. Thanks for your incredible lengthy political service. How are you?
I'm good. You know, today's a better day.
Well, we have a lot to discuss, and things are going on fast and furious in Olympia. How's it going down there?
Well, you know, we're cutoff was yesterday at 5 o'clock. So Monday was fast and furious, and then it was very slow. We stayed till 2 o'clock in the morning. There was some very bad bills that we sent through, not that I supported them, but then there were some good bills too, of course. So now we're just getting ready to hear all of the Senate bills in our committees.
And take us through that process. So the House is through, it's submitted all of its legislation that it can submit now. And now the Senate takes what you've submitted and goes through it and does what now?
They go to committees over in the Senate. And in fact, this morning at 8 o'clock, bright and early, my House bill, conditional scholarship, was heard in education. So then that bill might go to Ways and Means, or it might go just directly to their rules to be voted on the floor. Well, I don't know. Sometimes they make that decision in committee. So all of our bills then are now heard in the Senate. And then the Senate bills. Now today I had my first sitting in Human Services. I had education this morning and I heard Senate bills and Human Services, Youth and Child Care this afternoon and heard Senate bills.
Maybe education is a good place for us to start. You just mentioned a scholarship bill. Is that something that you're championing?
I'd love to talk about that. I love that, and it's actually out of my Human Services Committee because it is for behavioral health scholarships. Last year, I had gotten. You know, we all hear the horror stories that we're in a mental health crisis and yet we don't have enough behavioral mental health counselors. So I chatted with my colleague and said, I've been waiting. This was last year. Been waiting for somebody to do something about this. And she said, well, let's do a conditional scholarship. I was not familiar with them. They were already in place for teachers when we were in crisis for teachers. So there's grants available even today for teachers. And then there was for nurses and other medical fields. But no scholarships at that point for behavioral health counselors. So we talked about that whole process and found out that the scholarships that were being offered for the others, for the teacher and the other medical providers, people were not using them. And they weren't using them because there were too many roadblocks. One, if, for instance, you started that at your college and for some reason you had to quit or you just didn't like it anymore and you left the field, you have to pay that what they've given you back because you didn't complete your requirement. And the interest rate was quite high. And so what we did with this bill last year was we lowered the interest rate to 2%, and we gave them a few more reasons why they could leave school. One of them maybe is because you're married to a military guy or woman and you're moving. That's a perfectly good reason, and we would let you off of that, whatever, you know, monies that you had accumulated in your scholarship. So this year, we found that, first of all, that passed unanimously in the House and the Senate. So we thought we were way on our way. We're going to start getting, I was advertising it in my newsletters, advertising for people that are interested in becoming counselors. Come to find out, the RCW didn't allow for our behavior counselors to be facilitated out of Washington Health Corps. And so we had to change the RCW this year. So that's all this bill did this year was change the RCW. So now it can be the program can be implemented by Washington Health Corps. And hopefully by the first of the spring, March, we'll be able to have that in place so that folks that are interested in getting into the behavioral health counseling will do that.
And so the parameters then, if I'm understanding correctly, is very similar to the public service criteria for student debt forgiveness as well, right? Very similar?
Yes, right, yeah. So and this just requires them to work in some place in the state of Washington for at least 3 years.
Got it.
We're rural area and underserved. Forgot to add that part.
Oh, okay.
And underserved.
That could change things.
It could
maybe hinder where it's most needed as well, but I guess to be determined.
Yeah.
All right, let's stick with education. And what you said, there were some good bills and bad bills, and I don't expect you to know all of them, so I'll kind of give you a preamble ahead of time when it comes to some of the bills that are coming out of the House and including the Senate. House Bill 2331 is the what I would call the controversial bill tying curriculum to school funding, giving the state superintendents supreme power to decide curriculum, thus, I guess, kind of overruling school boards at this point. Did that make it out of committee at 5 o'clock yesterday? It was killed?
Yes.
It was killed. Very good. Very
good. We did not hear 2331. No, I don't. There were a lot of bills.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I don't expect you to know all of them. There were a few that I have a hand on that I know some of the people that listen to the show wanted me to talk about, and that was actually one of them. Anyway, what 2331 did was would defund schools that didn't teach things like critical race theory, comprehensive sex education, things of that nature, teaching transgenderism to minors and stuff. So if that was killed in the House, that's very fine work. I'm glad to break the news here.
It is not on my list that we completed yesterday on the floor. It is not. So that was very good. So that's why it wasn't real familiar with me.
So that means the bill is dead then if it didn't come through 5 o'clock yesterday.
It's dead. However, yes, it's dead for this year. But they could bring it back next year.
All right. Well, let's stay with this education for a little bit. I think you know some of the data has come out and we've seen that children grades 2 through 9, currently 70% of Washington students cannot pass basic math, and 52% can't pass basic English at this point. We are spending almost $20,000 a child to put them through public education. What's happening here? Is this money well spent for the taxpayer and even for the kids?
No. We just are in crisis, and our graduation rate is so bad for the state, in my opinion. So I think that we need to have more involvement, right? More involvement. First of all, let's get back to, especially in that grade, special ed. We did increase special ed cap from 15% to 17%, right? So that will help in some degree, because I know that a lot of school districts are spending well over $1 million in that arena and not getting reimbursed for it. We talked for a long time about restraints in the classroom, and we passed a bill that will allow for some restraints. It will allow for kids to stay in the classroom, but they will not, and it will allow for the rest of the kids to leave the class on occasion. There has been some real issues with special ed children and how we are handling them in the schools. We do not have enough staff. We hopefully we'll be able to do that. We're going to look at it again next year. I think that that's part of our problem, is how we are dealing with our special ed kids and how they are being taught in the classroom. We have horror stories in education, and one of them from our state representative, Paul Harris. His daughter is a school teacher, and she, at one point, in 2 weeks' time, their class was disrupted 5 times, where all of the classmates had to leave. That is not okay, right? So we've got some real issues there. And that disrupts our other kids from learning, Vincent. So when you say they're not learning in their classroom, some of that is because of the chaos in the classroom.
I have a child that teaches this brand of education. Yeah, he's in the special needs for children, and he calls it a travesty. What happened with the absence of classroom time for kids during the pandemic really affected special needs children to a degree that we're just simply not discussing at length or even out in the open to any degree whatsoever. So has the House thought to maybe look at this besides just throwing money at this, getting down specific?
You know, social and emotional training, you know that, and this is the speech I gave on the floor yesterday. Social emotional training used to be taboo words. Well, since COVID, there have been some real issues, and we have got to help these young people that were kept home learn how to get along with each other. Yes, that should be taught at home, but until those kids are in the classroom with other kids, we don't have that ability to do it. So there is a bill that we passed to teach the teachers to teach the kids how to get along with each other. How simple is that?
So last thing on education, I did want I preach this all the time. Charter schools, funding for private schools, parochial schools. Did that enter the conversation during this caucus?
No, it didn't. It didn't. It did last year a lot, but we didn't. You know, my bill a couple years ago was the money follow the children, and didn't even get a hearing last year. So I didn't bring it up this year. Not that I, you know, when the climate's right, I won't bring it up again, because I will, because we need to do that.
It's my understanding that the Senate is introducing or about to introduce something, Senate Bill 5809, which would provide funding up to $1,550 per student for funding charter schools. And I'm not sure if that made it through or that's been funded yet. I mean, I don't expect you to have these answers on a whim like that. So,
no,
again.
But good to ask me that. And that was 5859, did you
Senate,
say?
Senate Bill 5809.
Well, now I'm going to look it up, because I'll be excited to see if it comes over to us.
Yeah. Let's hope that does make it through. I know Steve, the producer, wanted to ask you a quick question. Go ahead,
okay.
Steve.
Okay. Yep.
So my question is this, has the number of special needs students risen in the last, let's say, decade?
Absolutely.
I'm 64, and I don't remember any disruptions whatsoever growing up. We had a class that was for the special needs kids, and occasionally you would see them in the library or whatever. You talk with them, what so forth. But if a kid got out of hand in the classroom, the teacher could take you out. But talk to us a little bit about that, because I've heard this, but what is the rate? This must be super large group.
Right. So they can be, there was a superintendent in here today in my office. He has, it's a very small school, 150 kids. 20% of them are special need kids.
Oh,
20%.
Wow.
The average is like 15-16%. Can I tell you a quick story?
Please.
As you mentioned, Vincent, I owned a restaurant and a bar for 20 years, the Dutch Cup Restaurant in Sultan. And I adopted a little girl in the late 80s. And so I got involved in the school. And in the classroom, I could see children of parents that I would see in the restaurant and the bar having problems in the classroom when I was in there. And you know what I thought then? I thought, these kids will be growing up and they will be having more children because they're in the drug and alcohol world in their life. And it is exasperated. Right. I don't know how other people feel about what I'm saying, but those were my thoughts back then in the late 80s. And I believe it's come to truth. I believe it's come to truth.
It's manifested to this point. And you're seeing it bear out. The grades I just mentioned of the students not being able to pass basic math and English in America. It's the numbers just astonishing. Let's pivot a little bit to crime and drugs, since you just touched on it. I think we know that fentanyl is now the number one killer of adults 18 to 45 in the United States. We also know that 2,845 Washingtonians died of drug overdose last year alone. What's happening in the legislature? Since Blake, we've gotten much softer. We have decriminalized the criminal code. We've condoned this abhorrent behavior. And this is the manifestation of that, is everything that we're seeing. Is there anything new in the House to potentially recriminalize drugs in Washington state?
So we did pass the bill, House Bill 1956, and it's fentanyl education in the schools. So that's a start, right? Because, and you know, I don't know if you remember, but we had the DARE in school years ago, and they always, you know, it went on for, I don't know, 10 years max, and they said, oh, but it didn't work. Well, you know what? It was something. We've had nothing for years. So this is going to be something to teach the kids about fentanyl. Now, most of them are going to know a lot more about it than the person who's teaching it, in my opinion. But it is, again, something. We need to do that. Now, our the bill that we heard from the Senate today is a Wilson bill, and it is about what do we do when CPS is called into a home because of abuse and they see fentanyl and they see a little baby in the house. Now, you see, my take on it is you take the baby away from the whole situation until they are in treatment. Well, the consensus down in this majority is keeping the families together, because they feel that science shows that no matter what reason you take that child away from the family, it's going to become trauma for that child. I agree with that totally, because I know what my adopted daughter went through and still goes through, right? Because she lost both of her parents, and she lost her grandparents, and then I have her, and she still has trauma over the abandonment, right? Okay, I get that. But at what point is it more important to keep that baby alive, right? That's my point. So the Wilson bill does all kinds of things. It includes three pilot programs. I'm not poo-pooing the bill. I'm just saying I don't think we're getting to the nitty-gritty of the situation. We need to be firmer on what these families are going through and be able to take those children easier. We had a House Bill 1227 3-4 years ago that was all about keeping the family unit together, and ever since then we have been lagging and losing children in their homes, as Oakley, right? Remember Oakley's story? Hoquiam, she was in foster care for a year. She was a baby. They introduced her to her family, and a few weeks later, they put her back in the family. And then at five years old, she disappears, and there is no trace of this little girl. And I say it should be illegal, and you should be doing time if you cannot produce your child, and you are the sole supporter of this child. Where is that child? Okay, there's no body, but this person needs to be punished because they didn't take care of this child. Well, you can see that I'm pretty emotional about this.
You should
and
be.
And I still feel this.
And I didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
That's all right. I'm done. I need to calm down a minute.
as a deputy, I see this quite often.
Yes.
I had a report, and this is a matter of public record, so I can tell the story. Mom walks into emergency room, baby non-responsive. Well, turns out she gave the baby fentanyl just because he was crying too much. And after 2 hours of attempting to resuscitate, the baby didn't make it.
No.
So the mom was held on a warrant and subsequently released the next day. And so this is happening every day. That will go down as a poisoning of that a child, not as a drug overdose. And this is where the numbers are skewed. And in my opinion, Democrats are criminal. Is they are negligent. They are asleep at the wheel. They're absentee landlords, whatever term we can throw at them, and don't deserve to be the adults in the room making these decisions. Last year, over 400 Washingtonians were murdered in the state, another 23% increase. And we also have... We also lead the nation in property crime. these are all manifestations these last 3 years. And so what's the tone in the legislature? Why isn't anyone getting serious? And are Republicans pushing them?
Yes. Yes, we are. But they're not hearing it, and they're never going to hear it. They think different than we do, totally. They don't believe that people should be doing time for drugs. And the fact is, they're doing the robberies and the burglaries and the hit and runs because of the drugs. So if there is no consequence, they're going to keep doing it. We are in a lawless society.
Yep.
It reminds me of the Western days, right? It's a very, we're in crisis. We are. Safety is, I am concerned about going to my car tonight in the dark on the campus. I'm concerned.
My wife, and you've met her before, is this petite little thing. She's actually learned to shoot these last 3 years and now carries a Glock. This is the circumstance we're in now. And of course, Democrats want to come for the guns as well. And I think what I find the most appalling about the progressive Democrats is the Senate is introducing a bill to lower the blood alcohol content to 0.05. Yet they've made fentanyl effectively legal to possess three times before you're subject to arrest. So I think we need to somehow get this message out there and publicize this, that this is what's happening. These are the issues that need to be talked about and the laws that need to be passed. And again, they're just simply dismissing it, talking about getting another counselor, getting another fentanyl education. Look, we know they can turn on the TV. They can go on Snapchat and see fentanyl education. Like you, to your point, you said the same thing, that they probably know more than we do.
Agreed.
And I think the sad part, Representative, is we're losing a generation right in front of our eyes, and it seems that no one is serious about it. And matter of fact, you have the left waving pom poms.
When 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds steal a car and run down pedestrians and put them in the hospital in Harborview, and the car is so badly totaled, it is totaled, right? The good thing is that when they went to court, the judge put them in detention. And this was Seattle. So this was a miracle. So somebody's listening and paying attention, and I'm sending a letter to that judge thanking her for doing that. When the defense attorney wanted to let him go home to mom and dad said, "Don't send him home. I can't deal with him."
Good right? dad. So that's a good parent.
That is a good parent. Yeah. And let me fentanyl. I have to one more thing.
Please.
We had three deaths in the last 2 weeks. In my little community from fentanyl. And it's just not the young men. It was a 16-year-old, two 16-year-olds, and a 30-year-old. So it's, you know, it hits every age.
It really does. And the 18 to 45 number is always utilized because that's the biggest data points that they use. It's the biggest number. But the numbers of the juveniles or the youngsters that we're losing, I see it every day. I see them. One day you see them, one day you don't. And then you find out hearing from some of the other young people on the street, "Oh, yeah, he OD'd. We couldn't bring him back." And again, it's nauseating. It's probably one of the reasons I'll retire probably 2 years early. And I want to maybe just, since we're on that, let's discuss that, because it's common knowledge since the time of the pandemic that Washington has been hemorrhaging law enforcement.
Yes.
We now have the lowest number of police officers per capita in the United States.
Wow.
What's being done to address this? Is this even a conversation in the House?
Well, so we do have academies opening up, you know. We funded them last year, and there's supposed to be two in the state. We wanted it up in Skagit at Community College Skagit. There's been some glitches there, so they're looking at Everett. But within the next 2 months, there will be an academy up and running. And we do have one in Vancouver. So we've opened up more academies to train them. We just need to make sure that we invite them in, right? And so what are they doing for the marketing? I'm not sure. We need to be doing that. We need to be emphasizing that. But frankly, who wants the job, Vincent?
Absolutely right.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, to your point, the numbers bear out what you're saying is that we don't have young boys and girls signing up anywhere near the number that we did 5 years ago, petitioning or trying out to be police officers or even taking the test anymore. We've hit that fork in the sense that every agency is fighting for the same lateral, trying to pull a guy from other counties, other states, and that's going to run out. Officers like myself are a great example because I should work another 3 to 4 years, but I've been eligible for over 2 years, and I'm going to leave June of 25 next year and call it good. And again, you're going to take those. And I see it every day. I know three others that are leaving. We're watching these careers that they could continue to contribute to the community and provide the services that are necessary. But it just feels like you've got your thumb in the dike and it's collapsing around you.
Yes.
And again, the progressives own every bit of this. And you look across the states, it's not just Washington. It's Oregon. It's California. It's Illinois. It's New York. And my hope is the electorate somehow just wises up a little bit to some degree.
I want to take a minute and thank you. I want to thank you, Vincent, for doing the work you do.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for saying
that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just want to pop in real quick. I think the kids that will want to come into it are the very ones that saw right through the COVID scam. They said that, what are you doing? You're going against our very constitutional rights. And those kids are intelligent, and they're going, if I'm going to be told by the state that I can't work, or counties that I can't work, if I don't go along with an agenda, those guys and gals, they don't want anything to do with it. So we just saw with 2020 became another chink in the armor of above all, of these good young men and women. They don't want anything to do with that. They saw what was going on.
If you take it even a step further, there's a constant effort to eliminate qualified immunity.
Yes.
where you know, officers or people maybe seeking careers in law enforcement don't want to get in the career. They don't want to lose their home.
No.
They don't want to go to jail. They don't want to go to prison if they make the wrong decision, pull the trigger at the wrong time. And these are judgment calls being made every day. And we know we only hear about the bad, you know, and I don't even want to give a 1/10 of 1/100 of none of that. It's rare. It's an anomaly compared to all the good police work that happens day in and day out. Maybe let's pivot to homelessness a little bit. The Democrats believe that solving homelessness, besides decriminalizing drugs, is to increase the number of housing units available through the state. I think that's reckless, and I have my own opinions on it. But what say you, Representative?
Okay, I would love to tell you that my feelings about it. The single door, no, the no barrier housing is nothing, in my opinion. Not any part of that works. We are looking at hotels in Everett that had to be shut down and people move because of all the drugs. It is a hazardous waste now, right? The whole thing. So they've got to be, in fact, I think Nate Nearing said something about they're going to go on a maintenance schedule where they will close them down every few months and clean them up. Well, what kind of tax money, how well spent is that, right? Makes no sense. They need to be going to treatment. They need involuntary commitment. They need to be treatment. And then we find them and progress them out into permanent supportive housing. And then maybe just regular housing if they're on their own. They're doing good. It is a crisis down here, too. I mean, Olympia, 7-8. When I came here, my first session was 2018. I drove through downtown Olympia and it was encampments everywhere. It is no different today. You go to downtown Olympia and people are sleeping in the doorways of the businesses today. Makes me very sad. We are not doing them any service.
You're absolutely right. And it's the homelessness is, for the most part, it's policy driven.
Yeah,
when you have policies in place that you're giving debit cards to these folks, you're giving debit cards to illegals, you're decriminalizing narcotics, meaning that you can stay here and stay high. go sleep in a doorway. And now you've turned, you've allowed these people to recidivize their crimes over and over again. It's very basic math, right? It's carrot and stick. You have to have a hammer. If you don't have a hammer, you have what we have now, where the where the public is simply preyed upon at this point. And again, all policy driven from the progressives, every bit of it. And the answer is not more houses. I mean, those can be discussed, because what they're doing now, what the House did last year with House Bill 1110, was to preempt, as you know, a lot of the local laws and force them into escalating building codes and increasing densities that they probably don't have the infrastructure for. And I know, because my city is going through this and we're battling this every day. And so they have the wrong idea. They're just wrong on all the issues, and they have the wrong idea. And they have to see at some point that this continued proliferation, there is an end game. It's anarchy.
Sure. Yeah. Can I just tell you, I don't know how much time we have.
I think we have about 15.
Okay. So when I was mayor, the first job I was challenged with was helping with the encampment that we had across the river from our little town. There were 40 encampments. And at that time, they were coming across the river and buying drugs and alcohol for our teenagers. And they were running amok, right? So we formed a task force with all the leaders. And we did an intervention with these folks. And the sheriff was wonderful. Our chief of police took them a letter to each one of them and said, 2 weeks from on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, you will come to the Family Resource Center and get services, or you move, or you go to jail. One went to jail, 40 of them. Now that place now is a county park. And so I told this story to other cities, thinking they would catch on, but nobody caught on that that was the way to handle it, right? And now the numbers are so great, it's impossible to do that in any big degree, right? It's going to take a long time before we get a handle on this.
And I can tell you that the cops are getting frustrated in the sense that they'll arrest them. Prosecutors won't file, or even when they do, the judge will release them. So it's almost feeling like you're banging the head against the wall, your head against the wall, and getting nothing accomplished entire shift. So are there, I have to know, because you know I'm pretty hard on progressives. Are there any good Democrats in Olympia? Is there anybody to work with?
That's listening. If you happen to watch some of our voting, you will see there's 4 or 5 that will vote with us sometimes. I can't name names, right? That wouldn't be fair. But what I do, is it possible that we can talk for just a minute about House Bill 2114, which was our last bill on Tuesday at 5 o'clock, ended up to be 6 o'clock. It's the rent stabilization.
Please.
Terrible bill.
I'm not familiar. Can you elaborate?
Okay, you bet. It caps the total percentage of housing provider that a housing provider can increase their rent to 7% annually. You cannot increase your rent more than 7%. And it allows tenants to break their lease for no reason if they are increased beyond that. Okay. It limits late fees to 1.5% of the base rent. It applies the Consumer Protection Act to the violations of this law. Whatever that means. But the facts are, no one is going to build houses as rentals or apartments as rentals as long as this bill is in place. It will not be. So our housing market will go down instead of up.
Just like our commercial real estate.
Yes, exactly. It's a bad, bad bill, and it passed. Hopefully the Senate can kill it. Sometimes we get lucky and that happens.
So for the listeners, it's House Bill 2114, the rent stabilization bill.
Correct.
Well, I know Democrats never met a tax that they didn't like. And it seems that since we've got a few minutes left, I do want to maybe get into a couple of those. I know capital gains is on the ballot, hopefully this November. I believe it has the qualified signature amount.
Yes, it did.
Let's talk about that. What was the selling point? Because 3,000 people paid another $850 million in new taxes, yep. And next year that'll be up to $3 billion. Aren't we just forcing these people out, just like Bezos? Are they going to follow him?
Yeah. Well, interesting thing. I think the budget came out today, and I didn't get a minute to look at it. But apparently, they miscalculated the gross amount of money that would come to us, the total amount. They were calculating on people's income at the gross level, not the net level. So their estimate was wrong. I don't know what it looks like, but it's several million dollars. And is that a good thing? Only that it makes me laugh, right? Some of the bills that went through here were bills that used some of that capital gains. That is disturbing because there's a good chance it won't be around next year. So that's kind of the underlying thing that's been happening with capital gains.
I have a quick question as related to the ultrasound that I was talking to Vincent about this. It's called Senate Bill 6151, an act relating to the provision of an ultrasound and adding a new section chapter. And basically it's this. A new section is added to chapter 18.130 RCW to read as follows. An ultrasound or similar medical imaging device or procedures may only be provided by a health care provider holding an active license under one of the chapters listed in RCW 18, and then the rest of the numbers, and acting within their scope of practice, or B, a person acting under the supervision of a health care provider holding an active license under one of the chapters listed in RC. And so what it seems to me is our church mentioned this because it seems to me it's one more way to get people so they can't go to a crisis pregnancy clinic, which is where people get ultrasounds and find out that they have babies that are alive, and it prevents abortion. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I haven't seen it or heard about it yet because it hasn't come across our desk, but it's just more control, right? More government control. I don't know.
Yep.
I don't have a lot to say. But when you said ultrasounds, I was thinking about the they're doing research back east in Vermont about using ultrasound to first to stop Parkinson's tremors, to stop drug addiction, the cravings for drug addiction. If you go to 60 Minutes about 4 weeks ago on Facebook, you'll see it all. It's been amazing research. Just thought I'd throw that in.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so the last thing I want to touch on before we head out was the rest of the initiatives. I know they're sponsored by Republicans and they're pushing them through. And so I believe all six of them have the proper amount of signatures now, correct?
Correct.
So any bills you get, any initiatives you're getting behind in particular that you want to talk about?
Well, I think they're all so important. We just talked about the capital gains one, so that's the one that's closest to my mind, and hope that that goes down, you know, with gangbusters. Can you remind me what they are?
Let's stick with taxation then, because the carbon gas tax that they've put in place, where they're selling these kind of carbon chits to big business, and we've all seen, and you weren't around for my opening monologue, but Washington is now the second in the nation as far as fuel prices go, surpassing Hawaii, and because of this here. And it's my understanding that, and I had Representative Reichert on here, and he says that there's language in there, that where the governor's actions, not through executive action, that there's language baked in there to maybe to undermine or take down this carbon tax. No, the gas tax.
I don't know. I don't know. But what I will say about that is the frustrating issue is that the small farmer is having a lot of difficulty in paying their gas bills. You know, they were supposed to be exempt. It says so right in the bill, they're exempt. Yep. Well, the big corporations got their exemption because of whatever reason, but Department of Ecology has not addressed our little farmers, and they need more help than ever. So that's frustrating. I'm really trying to look into that, see if we can't get that taken care of.
Well, all right, Representative. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on here, and and I never get to all the questions, and I'm hoping that we can have you back on again. Is there anything you wanted to maybe discuss? I probably should have asked that earlier.
Okay, well, so I'm about prevention, and we're talking about our society and our families, and what how everything has just gone amok. So I'm about prevention. So my bill 2-3 years ago was getting family support centers in all our communities. That is going very well. The other part is prevention. Our children. We need to be helping our children when they are after school, before school, and they might be at the Boys and Girls Club. Let's make sure that they get into projects that they start feeling good about themselves. And so I have a proviso to help the Boys and Girls Club in Snohomish and Skagit County to implement 4-H in their curriculum so that these kids can learn that they are able to and capable of learning all kinds of things so that it makes them feel good and gives them the confidence. Then they take it to the fair and they see it on the wall, and then they get a little check at the end. And so that gives them more pleasure, right? So it hopefully we get to them at 6, 7, 8, 9 before they're into things that teenagers get into sometimes. So that's, it's prevention. I work hard on that. I might spend more money in the kids' arena than some of my colleagues think I should. But you pay today instead of tomorrow when they're older, okay? That I'll leave that as my closing remarks.
Amen to that. Is there a website you'd like to plug or a site so that people can get a hold of you?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know what? I'm going to give you my cell phone.
Please do, and we will have it on the reader board when it goes on Rumble and all the podcast channels as well. So go ahead, please.
425-327-2093. That is my personal cell phone. I got rid of all the other cell phones. I cannot carry 2 or 3 or 4. So I'm a texter. Text me a question. Tell me who you are and what do you want to talk about. You can find me on Facebook. Carolyn Eslick. Okay.
Friends and family, you now have Representative Eslick's personal number. Feel free to get a hold of her should you have questions or commentary. I'm sure she'd love to hear from you.
I would. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Representative. Bless you and your family. Thank you so much for taking
the
time. Friends, welcome back to the show. Thanks for sticking around. Friends, all great societies eventually collapse. It makes no difference who they are. The only real substantive difference between any of them is the duration of existence. And the reasons are always the same: the unquenchable thirst for power and the infinite lure of greed. It might be difficult for many to accept, myself included, but the America we know and love is declining rapidly. In fact, many believe that America could potentially be in her final days, especially since the progressive has bankrupted her financially, spiritually, and morally. Every bit of American culture is under constant attack by the Marxist progressives, from the way we govern ourselves to the way we raise our families, even for the foods we eat. What Barack Obama started during his presidency, the radical progressives have begun to fast track. The sowing of political vision, social unrest, and the relentless effort to wipe away the fundamental principles of a Judeo-Christian society has inflicted serious harm on this once great nation. men and women from all sides, all walks of life, are being compelled to pick a side. And God help you, if you choose the wrong side, they'll come for you. And that's the fear many of us have. We've witnessed families being ripped apart, school curriculums being perverted, entire neighborhoods destroyed by crime and homelessness, and a generation being wiped out with fentanyl. Friends, this is the new normal progressive Democrats promised you. It's been roughly 50 years since America saw so much turmoil, and this happens every 50 years or so. But by dissecting this time period, you discover two very important factors. The blight is exclusive to progressive Democrat-led cities and states, and it's the same Democrat cities and states where the turmoil began 50 years ago. Nothing has changed in these communities. As a matter of fact, it's arguably worse. You now have a half a century of sample size of Democrat policies in action. And allowing these communities to perpetually rot day in and day out, year after year, and in this case, decade after decade, is criminal. Elected leaders have a mandate to protect and defend the Constitution and the communities to which they're elected. Permitting lawlessness and promoting incivility through reckless policies has cost way too many innocent lives. And there's nothing random about what's happening in progressive states. They are simply burned out shells of what they once were. The blame must fall exactly where it belongs, on the shoulders of progressive elected leaders. I encourage you to look across the country at Republican-led cities and states, because they're thriving. And the masses are flocking there to disentangle themselves from progressive communities. This includes the business community as well. The progressives' failure to protect each citizen's right to liberty and the pursuit of happiness is a violation of both the oath of office they swore and the constitutional mandate they assume when they take office. And it's clear to this legislator, progressive woke culture is dividing America for profit and power. And while some progressives may differ in the method of execution, they all share the same common view that government at every level in America must be reformed at any cost. Progressivism is simply the 21st century version of 20th century Marxism, just a fancier title. Lyndon Johnson wrote, and I quote, "Yesterday is not ours to recover, but tomorrow is ours to win or lose," end quote. I'm afraid you, the people, are going to have to decide if it's better to live a day on your feet or a lifetime on your knees, because that's where we're headed. Friends, thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I hope you got something out of it. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will be back the next few weeks, 3 or 4 weeks in a row. Next week, we will have Dr. Raul Garcia, who's running for Senate. I'm excited to get him on here. He's running against entrenched elected leader Maria Cantwell. But once again, let me thank Representative Carolyn Eslick for literally staying from the end of her session last night to coming here to join us today. And what an incredible... what an incredible gesture it is, and what a great public servant. Kudos to her for choosing to make a difference in her community. Also, let me thank Steve, the producer, for all the work he does behind the mic to get us on the air. And lastly, I want to thank you, the Mill Creek View audience, for listening. It's no easy trick bringing you the truth in today's America, but as always promised, I will always endeavor to do so. So until next time, I am Mill Creek City Council Member Vincent Cavalieri, and I wish you all God's peace. Take us home, Steve. I wait impatiently for the
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.